Attention and discussion, colleagues, it's because I'm not at a point where I'm willing to move this forward until we can get some other things done. So what I'd like to do is have John to do an overview for us in looking at the performance measures and number two, look at that piece which is special purpose appropriation. Is there another item or issue on this that you'd like to bring up for discussion? Because I kind of like having a framework for having committees, so we won't go off on a tangent in all kind of different subject areas, and also make sure that our time is well spent.
Madam Chair, there was a memo sent to us from John Britton talking about a policy issue in looking at redirecting some of the proposed funding for FIA.
Mm-hmm.
Can he go through that a little bit?
Absolutely. So that can be on the agenda as well.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
You're at the other end, Bates.
Dr. Bates, you're on here.
Yeah. It does sound
good. Madam Chair, I appreciate the word you used to open the committee discussion, because I think there are arguments on both sides of this issue, and it's like many of the decisions we make. The easy compromises were reached long ago, and now we're down to the hard choices. I think a choice does have to be made. So at this juncture, I think this is an issue that needs to be fully vetted and advantages/disadvantages weighed appropriately. So I appreciate your work.
And the thing that is important to me, because when we started off, if you will recall, not that I needed to, but I was very much supportive of the work that you and Dr. Bates have been doing on this issue, because you've been working on it longer than I have, because I have this global view of the world, but you guys have focused in on some of these issues, and so I want to honor that and respect the fact that these issues, I think it was one lady brought up Ellen Penny when she was testifying on another bill. Wasn't this issue brought up as well?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I want to make sure that we don't kind of censor what we do to the degree that some of the issues that people care about and some of the concerns are discussed, and so that's important to me. With that in mind, John, I'd like for you to give us some overview and maybe you know, vet some of these issues to the degree that, and I'd like to hear from Ben and Bates in terms of the senators, Ben and Westland and Dr. Bates, regarding some of the things that concerns and issues you have once John has finished here. Is that okay?
Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm going to walk you through my memo dated today, and I've left you a copy in front of you right now, and also some of you may already have this because we distributed it last week. The co-chair budget for the insurance pool governing board on the Senate side would reduce their budget, their general fund budget, by about $1 million. The House budget reduced the IPGB budget by about $600,000. So obviously there's a difference there. What I want to focus on are where those reductions would be, first of all, and the impact of those reductions on the agency's performance measures. And I've asked the agency to be prepared to talk to you about the impact of these reductions on agency program as reflected in their performance measurements. The second thing, as the chair indicated, that I believe we should discuss is the possibility of redirecting some of the general fund in this FIOP budget, the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, to a special purpose appropriation where it might be allocated either back to the FIOP or to the Children's Health Insurance Program within DHS, or perhaps even OHP standard within the Department of Human Services. But we'll get to that in a moment.
And, you know, I hope Dr. Goldberg is listening to to this committee in hopes that I had talked with Teresa today. And Dr. Goldberg, if you're listening, I'd like for you to come down and join us.
I would like to start with the third page in this packet, which is a simple spreadsheet that I put together, and it shows you the proposed reductions to the Insurance Pool Governing Board's governor's recommended budget. You can see that the top line is the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget, $26.9 million general fund, a significant amount of other funds from the Department of Human Services, which are really federal funds, both Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program funding, total funds budget of about $81.5 million. This represents a significant increase from the 2003-05 legislatively approved budget because we are facing a maintenance of effort requirement. And 2 years ago when we put the budget together, we assumed that we would have a couple of years to make up any shortfall in expenditures, and that's what we're facing for the 2005-07 biennium. We have an additional 4 months within the 2007-09 biennium to complete a maintenance of effort requirement. In terms of expenditures, this is about $40.9 million over the five-year period for the OHP2 waiver. But that is why there is such a general fund increase in the governor's recommended budget. Now, the first two lines show adjustments that we have been making to all agency budgets, the public employee retirement system adjustments, rate changes, and the attorney general adjustments. Both of these are going to be put or have been put in package 801, which is a code within the ORBIT system for these particular adjustments. And you'll see that in a moment when we get to the ORBITS document. All the other changes are in package 811, which is on line 10, totaling $1 million general fund. And I'd like to walk you through those. The first, on line number 3, is a reduction of services and supplies of $102,000 general fund in the Information, Education, and Outreach Program within the Insurance Pool Governing Board. And this,
wait, say that again. That is their service and supplies, but it's really...
It's marketing costs, things like that, primarily. And when the House and the Senate gave me directions to reduce this budget, I went to the agency and said, where are the best places to take this? What causes the least amount of programmatic damage? And this is one of those places. However, I would say that the intention of the agency, and they can clarify this with you in a moment, is to reduce their marketing efforts on what are known as certified plans, the marketing of certified plans. Two of their performance measures have to do specifically with certified plans, and so this reduction will have an impact on that, on those performance measures. And we'll look at that in a moment, Ben. Line 4.
The second other question about line 3. If you cut back on their marketing, are they going to have a harder time maintaining their effort as far as selling these policies?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, that's very likely. And when we looked at reductions in this budget, that's exactly what we were looking at, was
okay.
The concern that if you reduce administrative expenditures, either in the form of marketing or the number of people doing the effort, working on this to process applications, or whatever it is that they are doing, that you could reduce the ability of the agency to spend the dollars associated with the maintenance of effort.
And then, if I may, Madam Chair, more
sure.
Specifically, does it have a greater impact on one of their two major thrusts, on the group or individual market? Or it's about the same. I'm seeing Rocky and several of the agency folks say, no, it's about the same. Okay. I just want to clarify that.
The second, or the, I'm sorry, the fourth line is does not have a programmatic effect because it is simply a fund shift using some available other funds revenue in lieu of general fund, but it does reduce the general fund budget by $200,000.
Where does the other money come from?
Hold on and I'll tell you if I can find it. First of all, there is some cash balances, but aside from that, there's the reimbursement of staff services from OMIP. That is, we have a couple of folks that work for FEOP that also work for OMIP, so OMIP provides some funding back to the Insurance Pool Governing Board for their work. There's some interest that has accumulated. There are some recoveries, and although it's not in this particular adjustment, there is indeed a Robert Wood Johnson grant, which is about $250,000, but it's restricted. We have to spend it on the activities associated with that grant. So, summary, cash balances, reimbursement for staff services, some excess fund interest. That's where this other funds is coming from. The next line is a shifting or the acknowledgement that in addition to those fund balances that I just mentioned, there is some tobacco settlement carryover. This was funding that was originally intended to be spent in the current biennium, but in fact it even goes back further than that and comes from the 01-03 biennium. It has not been spent to date, but it does need to be used as part of the maintenance of effort requirement.
Madam Chair,
is
there an explanation of why this money has not been spent?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, I think that the agency has done about all it can do in terms of marketing and making the expenditures necessary, but it has not reached, it has not spent its full budget for 03-05. Part of that has to do with the fact that the agency was told to kind of ratchet back when they were having budget issues, but they have tried, in my opinion, as hard as they can to get group insurance coverage and to supplement that with further individual subsidy payments on individual policies. But you'll see that money is intended for the maintenance of effort. And secondly, the line after it, line six, is some carryover of federal funds that will be received in the next biennium to reimburse us for general fund expenditures that were made in the current biennium. Now, the alternative to that would have been to revert that much, $1,035,000, in general fund and reappropriate it for the next biennium, but we thought we would try and keep things simple and instead of reverting that general fund, spend the general fund, take the reimbursement of federal funds and move it into the 05-07 biennium. So that's what's going on in line number six. Line seven reduces the general fund for maintenance of effort for the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program's subsidies. And it's about $500,000. And this takes the agency right down to the target that they have established for a maintenance of effort expenditures for the 05-07 biennium. Now, in the governor's budget, there was about $500,000 excess, that is, over the maintenance of effort target. And then subsequently in 07-09, we wouldn't have to spend quite as much. But we're going to take, at least this would be a proposal to take the money away from the agency this biennium. It would have to be spent in 07-09. And I'll show you a schedule of the expenditures for maintenance of effort in a moment. line 8 reduces the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program non-subsidy budget, and I've made a notation again, like line 3, this has an impact on the ability to market the certified plans. And finally, line number 9 is to acknowledge the fact that when the budget was put together a year ago for agency request, that the agency used a lower match rate than we now know is possible, and we also know that we're going to be serving more CHIP enrollees or CHIP eligible enrollees. The CHIP match rate is even higher than the Medicaid match rate. So line 9 is adding $11 million of other funds. They are federal funds from the Department of Human Services.
And is this higher than 72 or no, just higher than the 64?
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, it is both the fact that the match rates for both Medicaid and CHIP are higher than they were when the agency first developed this budget, and secondly, because they're counting on more CHIP enrollees than they were before, a higher proportion of CHIP than they were before. So that's where this additional expenditure limitation is necessary.
Mr. Britton, the Medicaid rate is higher because of
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, the Medicaid match rate has changed for the better because our relative per capita income is not as good.
So that means our per capita income is a good news, bad news.
That's right. That's right.
You're comparing it to the rest of the nation.
Correct. Right. That's right.
Per capita
I just had, because if someone's out there that's listening that doesn't know how, you know, the Fed set these rates and these percentages, and so it is a good news, bad news. It may be good news because we're getting a little more from the Feds, but it's bad news because it means that our income level comparison to the other states is low.
Right. When you total this, the net change to the governor's recommended budget is on line 11. It's a little over $1 million reduction in general fund, increase of other funds of $1.6 million, increase in other funds from DHS, 10.6, total funds increase of $11.2 million. So this would be my recommended budget to you as far as the LFO budget is concerned for the Senate side of things.
Now, John, did you see any further negative impacts on this budget as a result of the $1 million decrease, other than the outreach portion and the performance measures? Why don't we go into performance measures, and
sure,
then they can ask some further questions on that? Because I really, really do want to have thorough conversation on this issue, because we're going to have to make some critical decisions, and I'd rather have as much information from you in consideration as well, you being on the committee along those lines. John.
Madam Chair, if you turn the page, you will then see the Insurance Pool Governing Board's performance measures. I'd point out, just as an introduction, that the first two were modified somewhat, not extensively, but a little bit, and that the agency has added three measures that are toward the bottom of the page, and you can see that in the far right-hand column as to what was modified and what was added. But more to the point, there were three performance measures that I wanted to call to your attention, not so much the measure itself, but the target that we're using. And that the first one is right in the middle of the page, the FEOP administrative expenses as a percentage of total cost. We know, because we're going to be, in this budget, we would have reduced the administrative portion of the budget, that the administrative percentage would also go down. And I talked to the agency a little bit about that and would recommend that the 10% administrative expenses as a percentage of total cost be lowered to about 9%, given the reductions that are proposed here.
What I'm going to do, Rocky, will you come so that if they have any questions at all, they can, we can just have a little conversation here, fireside chat.
Don't get too close to fire.
After Mr. Britton is through, what I'd like to do is to hear any concerns that you might have or tell us about the impact of the $1 million cut and that kind of stuff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last two, or I'm sorry, not the last two, but the next two down a little bit, the number of businesses who purchase an IPGB certified plan, you see that the targets there for 06 and 07 are 500 and 1,500 respectively. The agency has said that a more realistic number or numbers is 100 for 2006 and 200 for the 07 targets. Likewise, the next performance measure.
Senator Wesson?
Where did the 5 and 1,500 come from?
Madam Chair and Senator Wesson, I think that's a good agency question. The same is true of the next measure as well. Instead of the 1,500 number of children enrolled in an IPGB children's group plan, 1,500 for 06, 4,500 for 07, we're looking now at possibly 200 and 400. So I think it would be good to talk to the agency about those changes in the targets.
Mr. Britton, do you have any further comments before we listen to Rocky? Because I wanted you to...
No, not
Mr. Britton.
Okay.
But
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got here performance measure data summary we were given earlier in the session. I got the targets for this targets for this performance measure, and then the data is 1999, 456, 2708, 2001, 883, 2002, 1,315, and 2003, 743. I don't know if those numbers are correct or not, or this is what I'm looking at the right thing. That would line up more meaningfully with what their goals are, but this may be old information that's not correct now.
John, did you have a comment on that?
No, I don't right now.
One of the things I find very difficult in these things is every budget we're looking at has the goals. Then I have to dig back over here to see what the data shows against those goals so it means meaningful for me. Mm-hmm. And then quite often the agency's going, wait a minute, that's not the right data. Mm-hmm. And it makes it difficult. But that's what I've got. I brought that down with me. This was several months old, and I may be talking apples and oranges for a while.
So is that consistent with the goals they have, the performance measures?
The performance number goals are the same.
Okay.
Or the targets are the same.
Rocky doesn't know what you're...
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, if you're referring to the goal around, I'll ask you, around the certified plans, those were just implemented, so they're... I don't know what document you're looking at that indicates enrollments that go historically, because they just started March of this year. There are some historical experience with the administrative cost.
On page 17.
Madam Chair,
right. Madam Chair, Senator Bates is referring to a chart on page 17 of the budget book. And I've got, it's not the blue book, it's the white book.
Okay.
And Rocky, do you have that? Hmm. And I think, Senator Bates, you're referring to the first one.
Well, the first one you're talking about, where these numbers came from, and it looks like they were getting close to those numbers that dropped down. The next one down, the goal was 50. At one point in 2002, they list the data as having had 57, the next year 43. So I just don't quite understand where I'm not lining these up. Maybe I've got something wrong here.
That's training sessions.
First one is referrals made to insurance agents involved in the agent referral program.
Right.
They might match up.
Mm-hmm. I have that up to 1,315 in 2002.
But the 2006 target.
Yeah. Well, my point being that the targets are up and the results are down. And the next one, training sessions, their goals were in the 50s, and at one point in 2002, according to the information they gave us, it was 57 and 43.
Senator Bates, if I can respond to that briefly. If you recall, in 2002 is when the OHP2 waiver was first walked out the door and was approved, and we did massive marketing when that happened. And thus you'll have, when we had all those initial people come to us for FEOP, there was an inordinate amount of agent referrals were above and beyond what we had anticipated, because we didn't know when we were going to get that waiver. That was also true with the waiver, that when the Legislative Emergency Board approved moving forward with the waiver, we scheduled a variety of meetings throughout the state that were above what we thought we originally were going to have, simply because we got the waiver. We thought we were going to have our normal 25 training sessions. We stretched and went out and did 57. We went to 25 cities and chambers. So it has something to do with just what was happening then. You'll see some of the dips in 2003, and that's because we started trying to figure out whether we were going to stay open or close. We had the budget cuts. We had ballot measure 30. We got into some debates as to whether to continue doing some of the marketing or not. I don't know if that helps kind of look at some of the ups and downs.
Is that kind of consistent, Dr. Bates?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we're looking at an agency that's looking at a lot of extra money and having a difficult time selling their program on a group basis, which I understand the concerns they have, and companies not believing you. And then now we're trying to open up the individual market to maintain our effort. And it goes back to the discussion we're going to have of where we're going with this money. So let's leave it there and go on.
Yeah, okay? It sounds like they did more with less during that period of time. And then in 2003, when you had less, you did not accomplish as much as you had the year before.
Madam Chair, in 2003, because we basically cut back the marketing and just kind of held until some of the key legislative decisions were made and policy decisions by the governor in relationship to ballot measure 30, we've kind of just held back a lot of the marketing. You'll see our administrative costs skyrocketed as we kind of stood in place. Since that time, we've brought that cost down from above 20%. I think in June we'll be at about 11%, and our budget is projected now to be, I think it's 8.5%, given the proposed cuts that you're talking about today. So all of that is kind of reflective of the different policy choices and decisions that the legislature and the governor's staff have made about whether to open the program and close the program. Senator Bates is correct. Originally, we wanted about 50% of the enrollment in group market, because the average cost for group is about $120 or $118 per member per month, versus the individual market, which has an average of about $228. Which is still cheaper than OHP Medicaid, but it is a better bang of the group than it is for the Medicaid side. But because we got so far behind in those first 2 years, 3 years, we've decided in consultation with the governor that to get to MOE, we have to put a greater number of individual people in order to expend those dollars. Once we reach that, what you'll see is individuals start to come down and group continue to go up. The intent, I think, and the policy of the governor has been never to close group, but to utilize both group and individual to meet the MOE requirement. Okay. I don't know if that helps at all. Hope so.
So, Rocky, while you're there, tell this committee the impact of the $1 million cut that the Senate version of your
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's kind of like a catch-22. you have to enroll so many people, but we've got to take some of the money away, and I understand the competing needs and resource needs that we have as a state. So do you put all the people into eligibility so you can do the applications, or do you go do the marketing so that you, in effect, get the applications in but may not have the eligibility staff? What we're going to have to do, and it'll be our job with whatever you give us, is to do the balance the best we can to make sure we've got enough apps coming in the door in order and have enough eligibility workers to do them within a reasonable point of time. And examples, we have an agency standard that says you get an application in, I want a response, yay, nay, or I need more information within 10 days of receipt of that application. We know that if we can't staff up because of some of the administrative costs, that that's going to go from 10 days to 15 to 20. We're not sure yet because this is all kind of new to us, but we're going to have to lengthen out the ability to respond to people when they inquire. On the other hand, I can't get to the point where I'm doing 5 days on an app, which means I don't have applications coming in, so I've got to make sure that the marketing folks are out there marketing. The one area of flexibility I have, very frankly, was in the last session when we decided to go back into the business of certified plans. During all of that, you asked us to absorb those costs. About $187,000 is what we anticipated it would cost to implement House Bill 2537 and the certified plans. We agreed to do that. We have been, best we can, absorbing that. I will tell you very frankly, between my obligation to meet MOE under FEOP versus the certified plan, I've got to put all my resources into FEOP. That's the thing that has the state at risk the most, which means that basically we're going to drop all marketing and advertising except for we have one campaign that we've paid for over the next 2 months using some public service announcements. But we're basically going to have to get out of business of responding to small businesses around the certified plans. And that's where I think we have the discretion, but we really don't have the discretion on the FEOP side because of the potential of not meeting MOE. And that's why the reduction, Madam Chair, of the targets. And are those the right targets or not? I don't know. It's out of the air, very frankly. We just know that it's going to have an impact because I'm not going to do brochures. I'm not going to do mail outs. I'm not going to do special training with employer HR folks. I'll just have to back away from some of that marketing.
Madam Chair. Rocky, and I know last biennium was troublesome, and that there were a lot of policy decisions that had to be made because of budget. And yet there was the desire, I think, by this legislative body that you would have the ability to do some marketing. And what you're saying now, you know, and looking at the small business market, that will also be taken away.
Madam Chair,
how much of it will be taken away?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, I had no funds to market certified plans. Those were absorbed costs. So when I say how much will be taken away, basically all of my outreach for certified plans and the brochures and any of the special things we do with employers in terms of sending staff around the state to meet with large and small employers around that, I'll have to curtail. Not because I want to. I mean, the businesses have great needs right now, and we do see some success with the certified plans, but I'll just have to pull back so I can focus on FEOP.
Can you tell us what is the what percentage of small businesses do have in the state of Oregon have coverage now? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I don't have, Senator Winters, I don't have those statistics in front of me, but I believe that 50% of the businesses with 10 or fewer employees do not have health insurance. And I'm pretty positive about those figures. 72, I believe it's, I can get back to you, Senator Winters. Bruce Goldberg has a good chart that they put out, and I want to say it's in a small 60% of businesses provide or people receive their health insurance through employer-based coverage. But as you move down in terms of the size of business, when you start getting under 10 employees, you'll see a large percentage of businesses who do not provide health insurance.
And this was the market that you were actually going after.
Senator Winters, that is correct. 25 or fewer was what we were focusing on, even though the law said we could go up to 50. Quite frankly, 25 to 50, it's not our plan that's really going to entice those folks in. We were looking at the small businesses. Of the six businesses we enrolled last month, in total of 60 enrollments, you're talking about businesses generally with five or six individuals. We had 30 adults and 30 kids for six businesses.
Oh, that's what I was going to just have you update the committee on, because you had sent me a memo since I had wanted to know about the certified plans. And what I guess I wanted to know, in the 2 months where you say you've written six group plans with 30 adults and you've written three children's group plans with 30 children in 2 months since you started marketing, I mean, is that good?
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, I very frankly don't know what good is at this point. I will tell you that we had 30,000 enrolled at the end of 8 years when we did this before, but the first two or three years were extremely slow. And it wasn't really until 1993 when the legislature said, here's a pot of about $350,000, especially for marketing the certified plans, that we went from about 5,000 people up to 30,000, 33,000 in about 4 years. Let me tell you a little bit about how they're marketing that, because it's very interesting. Blue Cross and Health Net are the two carriers that offer the certified plans. And whenever they send out a quote, when somebody reads something we've sent out or an agent gives them some information, they request a quote on a certified plan. But they send them two quotes, one for the certified plan. They also then send them a quote for just a normal group plan. And they're keeping track of that. An example is that Blue Cross, and I don't have any statistics yet for Health Net because they're supposed to report on a quarterly basis, but Blue Cross reported in the first 2 months they had something like 192 quotes. That is small, uninsured businesses asking for how much would it cost me to buy one of these plans. Of those, six businesses purchased a certified plan, but six businesses purchased a regular group small employer plan, not one of ours. We've always known that many of the agents and the carriers use our plan as, and I don't like this word, great bait and switch, but they go in and say, here's the low model, don't you want it? And they go, no, that's too low, and they sell them another model. The purpose of the certified plans is not just to get them to purchase our plan, but is to engage them in discussions, them meaning small businesses, with agents and carriers around what their options are. And from that end, I think so far we're starting off good. I mean, we've only been going 2 months. You don't buy a new box of cereal off the shelf when it's just been sitting there for a month or two. And the carriers keep telling me that it takes 4, 5, 6 months for the word to start getting out to show some real interest.
Madam Chair, may I follow up?
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you. So those that are enrolling now, Regents and Health Net will still be offering this. We just aren't going to go out and market.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, unless I'm directed otherwise, if I have a choice between putting my resources in marketing and eligibility for FEOP versus the certified plan, I need to do that, I think, on the FEOP side to assure whatever level of maintenance effort I'm required to meet, I'm able to meet.
But the certified plans will still be available.
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, that is correct. And we'll do the best we can to weave it in, but when that weave-in is not costing us. And an example of that is we're going to be meeting with, we're scheduling now 25 stakeholder meetings, Head Starts, DHS offices, community action agencies, and this will be in July and August. We'll be going to about, I think it's 22 cities, from Baker to Astoria to Enterprise to Coos Bay and everything up the valley. Not focused on agents, but just focused on stakeholders. We'll be doing a lot around FEOP, CHIP, all the different social service programs, OMIP. We will weave in, at no cost, information about the certified plans. So rather than it being a focus, it becomes something that we just kind of bring to the table.
I'm just having Mr. Britton to show me, Rocky, since we looked at 0305 and you had a 14.9, and 0507, you're at 26.9, almost doubled, well, actually a little over doubling your budget. And my question would be to you, why is it that you cannot market the plans when you almost have a doubling plus some of your budget?
Madam Chair, may I respond a little
yes,
bit to that?
You
okay.
May.
If you flip over two more pages, okay. Go past the performance measures. And you look, there's one page called FEOP MOE calculation. And this shows by biennium how much expenditure relative to or for maintenance of effort we have been making and what we expect to make. To your question, Madam Chair, on 2005-07, the FEOP subsidy portion is the $23.2 million shaded there. That is the portion of, in the LFO recommended budget of 25.9, that's the subsidy amount. The remaining amount is for staffing to process the applications, and a small piece is, as you were questioning, having to do with the marketing of the certified plans and the marketing of the FEOP program itself.
And Madam Chair, CHIP, Oregon Health Plan, Medicaid, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, we provide training on a variety of public and private programs for both small businesses and large businesses as well as individuals. An example of that is we take about 2,500 calls a week through our five customer service staff. Only about half of those, a little over half, are for FEOP. The others are from small businesses, people looking for information on Oregon Health Plan, high-risk pool. And we use our staff really as a resource to help them connect up with the appropriate plan and program, public or private.
Further question?
Madam Chair, if we could, if we're done with talking about the performance measures, I'd like to bring up this issue that I sent you all an email memo on. And that has to do with some inquiries and some testimony that we heard in the Joint Human Services Subcommittee about perhaps shifting some general fund dollars away from FEOP and into a different program, such as the Children's Health Insurance Program within DHS, or perhaps the OHP Standard Program, which, as you know, is funded now with provider taxes and federal Medicaid dollars. This is a policy decision that you're facing. It does not have to be made today, and frankly, it is a relatively easy thing to do in terms of the budget. The budgetary mechanics are simple. That is to establish with some general fund that is currently in the FEOP budget, say $8 to $10 million general fund, a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board, which would be held for allocation until, for example, November of this year. And it could be either allocated to the insurance pool governing board for the FEOP program, or it could be allocated to the Department of Human Services CHIP program or OHP standard. Why would we do it this way? We would put it into an SPA because to do any of this requires some approvals from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and secondly, because the emergency board does not have the authority to take general fund from one agency and move it into another. Consequently, we'd need an SPA where they could allocate it either way, depending on the response from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So we would be seeking permission from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to do a couple of things if the decision were made to reroute or redirect this money to CHIP. We would be seeking permission, first of all, to meet the maintenance of effort requirement with expenditures made in the CHIP program. And I don't know how significant a hurdle that is with CMS, but it's the first thing we would have to be doing. The second thing we would have to do is to clarify with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that we would want a change in the waiver, some kind of an amendment, and I got some word from the agency this afternoon about changing the eligibility for the federal poverty level, income eligibility for CHIP, up to perhaps 300% of FPL. Now, the way that would be done is through what is known as an income offset or an income, looking for the right word. I'll tell you what it is in a second. An income disregard. So if a child who is living in a household of 300% of federal poverty level, we would have permission from CMS to disregard 33% of the household income, which brings them into 200% of FPL, which would qualify them under our current waiver. As a matter of fact, the waiver is now at 200%, so my email to you was incorrect. It is not at 185, it's at 200% of FPL. But the other thing we would need to do is to get a statutory change for CHIP. In statute, the CHIP federal poverty level for income eligibility is limited to 200%. So that would require a statutory change if we wanted to go that direction.
Actually, from the committee, in terms of your thoughts on this issue as to the maintenance of extra dollars in terms of whether we look at CHIP and stay free Apple and equal standards.
Madam Chair?
Okay. Bruce, Dr. Berg, let me be a part of this conversation, please. I know that we're doubling our efforts here with two people from the governor's office.
I get to next to Rocky, so that's great.
You got my phone message.
For the record, Bruce Goldberg.
Madam Chair?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I would like to know if, since we're taking general funds and putting it in these programs, what is the match, or do we get a match? And is it different with if we would... from CHIP or OHP standard or FIAP?
Madam Chair and Senator Monis Anderson, not appreciably different. If the money were routed into OHP standard, it would be a Medicaid match rate at about 39-61%. 39% state, 61% federal. If it were routed into CHIP, it would be about a 73-27. Is that right? Is that the math right now? 73%, 27% state funds. As it is within the FIOP programs, FIOP is a combination of the two, but heavily weighted toward CHIP. So that's why my response to you is it would not be appreciably different. The other information, though, which is germane to this, is that according to the Department of Human Services, the number, and I asked them this question, if we routed $10 million general fund and associated match, how many people or children would that buy coverage for? $10 million general fund would add 2,275 standard clients, 2275, 10 million general fund plus related match would add 13,595 CHIP clients. So a huge difference in the cost for those eligibility groups.
Now, where does that put us as far as federal poverty level is concerned in those people?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, for the CHIP, the FPL level would have to be raised to 300%.
It is the 300.
And would take statutory change.
And it would require a statutory change.
As well as a waiver.
As well as a
probably a waiver amendment.
Madam Chair, if I recall, and sometimes my recollection is off, but our discussion last session, one of the things that we had attempted to do, but ran into budget constraints, was to have CHIP up to 300% of poverty level.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question? I'm sorry to step out.
Dr. Vitz, can we just wait for a minute?
Yes, go ahead.
Let's introduce himself and give some comments or either wait for his question.
I can remember the question. Go ahead.
I'm coming in late to this conversation, so let's have the question.
Okay.
Rocky, and you have children under the CHIP plan inside of FEOP already.
Ms. Chair, or Madam Chair, Senator Bates, that is correct. About 30% of the enrollments that we have right now, which is about a little over 11,000, are children. We have another 2,500 that have been approved that are getting insurance now. In the group market, that figure is closer to 48 or 49% because you have a lot of dependent coverage. In the individual market, it's about 20%, but you have to remember the individual market has two populations, the general healthy kids and their parents, but we also have about a third of our membership that are primarily female, above the age of 50, with chronic health conditions that we help subsidize to purchase the high-risk pool, generally lower-income individuals. I don't know if that answers your question, Senator Bates.
It does. It leads to a second question, okay, if I may follow. And those children are under 175% of poverty level?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, all the children are under 185% of the federal poverty level. And I can get the figures for you if you want to wait a few minutes on what levels of poverty those children are in. I know 40% of our enrollments of that 11,000 are below 100% of the federal poverty level.
Madam Chair, I have questions that we can put to later.
Please proceed.
I'm trying to get a picture of what's the best way of getting these kids into an insured situation. Through the FEOP program with CHIPS under it, have you enrolled 100% of the kids who are eligible at 185? Do we have a percentage of those? And we obviously, if we put a lot more money, we're going to push past that, obviously.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, we have the same target population as the CHIP program has. And the answer is no, there are thousands of children who are eligible for both FEOP or for CHIP, who for one reason or another, whether it's outreach, whether it's their parents have chosen not to enroll them in either commercial or private health care plans.
Madam Chair, for that does beg the question for me whether or not if we were to open this up to a larger group of whether or not we'd be in a situation where we actually picked up that many more lives. If you open up 300%, but you have no way of contacting those kids, they don't come in immediately. Do you need that much money to do it? And that's a question you probably can't answer. I wouldn't expect you to. It'd be some more of a question that maybe Dr. Goldberg could. If you open the program up, could you ramp it up to 300? We have to maintain effort one way or the other. If you take the money and take it out of FEOP and put it into the other side, will you maintain effort there either? You've got a lot of kids now who are available at 185 that we aren't enrolling. What's going to happen if you go to 300%? Do you enroll more, or you just have something on the books?
Dr. Goldberg.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, there are really two issues here. One is, what's the policy objective that we're seeking? So number one would be, if we're looking to cover more children, one issue is, are there changes one can make around why it is that we're currently not covering all the children that are eligible? The next issue then would be extending eligibility upwards in the poverty level. So, for example, right now we have roughly 40, 50,000 children who may be eligible for the health plan but are not on it. Some of that's because we haven't done outreach and enrollment to the extent that we could if we had more funding. Other reasons are we require families to re-enroll every 6 months instead of every 12 months, which would cover more children. So there are a number of policy things that could be done to cover more children who are eligible. That's one policy direction. The second would be to then extend income eligibility higher up to cover more children. In both ways, it would take some time to ramp up. The second issue is to be certain that we continue to meet our maintenance of effort in as far as CMS is concerned. Whatever we do not want to in any way jeopardize meeting our maintenance of effort. And I think what we would ideally like to do is have the kinds of policies that will assure that no matter what, we continue to meet our maintenance of effort. So we certainly need to continue to enroll children, to enroll as many people as we can in the FEOP program until at one point we have any kind of a policy change as well as a change, an approval from CMS. Otherwise, we fall further behind in our ability to meet that MOE. Does that
answer your question?
It does, Madam Chair, but I understand. I appreciate your answer. Let me give you another way of looking at this, potentially. The federal government wants us to maintain our effort, and the effort really basically is aimed at people who are very low income who aren't covered for health care. You know, what I understand is we have a CHIP program that's fully funded but not fully utilized, either whether it's under FEOP or the CHIP program itself. There may be people or children above 185% who actually want health insurance who can't get it because they have medical needs. I don't know the answer to that question. But we know for sure we're not at 185% of poverty level as far as covering every kid in the state because the parents haven't asked for it or they're not available or whatever. We have a situation where we're putting money into a FEOP program, which we're pushing very hard to get people to enroll in and are not particularly successful. We're trying hard, but it's a hard sell because people are concerned about getting into a program that may not be there in the future and you get right down to it. And I still don't understand why when I ask insurance agents that, you know, what's available, I have to ask them about FEOP. And then they tell me, I know my employees aren't eligible, but I just want to know if they're asking, and they're not. Okay. And at the same time, we have an OHP standard program, which we're disenrolling people from who want to get in. There's something wrong with what we're doing here. I look at the numbers that you give me for the number of people enrolled in FEOP. It's not going up. It's going down. Okay. The numbers you've given me, okay, I'll talk to you about it later. It might be a temporary glitch we're looking at here. But, you know, we're not going the right direction with these programs. We're just enrolling in one program where there's a clear need, trying to build other programs where we can't get people to come in for multiplicity of reasons. Okay? And I'm not sure the federal government wouldn't say to us, we looked at it and said, well, you know what, you guys are doing the right thing, we'll let you shift the money. I'm not sure that bureaucratic that they wouldn't let us do that. I've only had two conversations with people who do waivers. On those two conversations, they were a lot more logical than we were. They were not hard to work with when you show them what you're trying to do. Now, that may not be the case anymore. So my point is maintain the FEOP program. I put some money in the fund. Ask the feds, can we move this? Can we put some in FCHIP? Can we put some in standard? We've got people who need health care in the state. We've got money we're not utilizing as well as potentially we would like to. So that's sort of my big picture look at this thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, just so you make sure, one figure. Mm-hmm. When we appeared before you a month and a half ago, before the Joint Committee, we had 9,000 people enrolled in FEOP. If you recall when I gave you the statistics on that. We now have a little over 11,000 enrolled 2.5 months later, with another 2,500 that have been approved but are out there now making application to get health insurance. So I assure you that since we started ramping up this program in September of last year, the last 6 months, we are adding 400 to 500, and we're going up like that.
Okay. Senator, what's
that? Thank you, Madam Chair. As complex as this question is, and I certainly agree this is a difficult issue, at least to my lights, it comes down to this, and that is we've got to answer three questions. The first is will CMS allow this? And since it is almost a certainty that had we asked the question even 2 months ago, we probably wouldn't have an answer by the end of session. We are then challenged by, which I think is actually easy to accommodate, coming up with a methodology that allows us to continue to allow Rocky to proceed along his maintaining of the OHP2 waiver MOE while at the same time awaiting the answer. I think we can get that through a specific appropriation to the emergency board. But most fundamentally is if this change is made, will we be providing more, very subjective word, more health care to more Oregonians? That's the fundamental question before this committee. And then third, if we come to that conclusion, then it's a question of, you know, what areas of existing delivery systems, CHIP, standard, whatever, that those dollars go to. I mean, that's what's really before this committee. And I think, like you say, as difficult as this is, those are the questions we have to ask. And having made that statement, I see the originator of the conference call I'm supposed to be making back in the district at 4 o'clock just entered the room. So if you could give me my leave of absence, Madam Chair, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. Dr. Goldberg, if any changes were to be made this time, what do you think the governor would be on this issue?
Madam Chair, the governor has clearly stated that what he'd like to see is for us to have the kind of policies that will cover children, and that he's been clear about saying that when resources are tight, that children go to the front of the line, and that would be where he'd like to see resources get put to be able to cover more children.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry to keep muddying the waters here. I don't want us, if we decide to make a change, I'm not saying we're going to, if we decide to make a change, I don't want us to box ourselves in again and set money in a fund that says it can only go to one program or the other, because you might find yourself in the same situation. You've got the money, but you're not signing the kids up. When we know we put the money in the standard, they're there immediately. Or we might find that we've so hamstrung the FIAP program that we can't make our effort in that short time that we have left. So what I'd like to hear from Rocky, if I could real quickly, is if we were to put that kind of money into a separate fund, hold it until October, November, would you have enough funds left to continue to ramp the program up the way you want to right now? Or would that seriously handicap your ability to do so?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, my assumption is that we would ramp up and continue to enroll as many people as we could. Now, let me just give, without getting tied to these figures, let's say you took $6 million out and you put it in special appropriation, or $5 million or $18 million, whatever it was. When it came to November, if I'm down, then we've got that money available to go to a standard or a CHIP or whatever you want to do. However, if I've actually exceeded my expectations, that is, maybe I have 500 more kids or 500 more adults than what I'd thought, the legislature would have the opportunity to say, well, level off here. Now let's take 7 of that 8 million and put it to standard or put it to CHIP, and we'll give you a million back because you've actually exceeded. So I think I see what I'm saying.
Yes.
As long as you have a flexibility to give me back a portion of that, because I want to keep pushing ahead so that I meet the MOE, if the answer from CMS is no.
Mr. Bitten?
Yeah. And Madam Chair, that's exactly why in my discussion we're limiting this time period till November. We can't operate on a normal CMS schedule, which can go on and on and on. Rocky needs to know one way or the other quickly.
Madam Chair, I think we're having some really good discussion on this issue, and particularly the ability to, and I would agree with Senator Bates, to have some flexibility. We've found ourselves over and over when we submit our waivers that we're being boxed in, and then it comes back that, oops, we can't shift or we can't change program or we can't serve more kids. The other piece I'd like to add to this, because I am concerned, that we continue to provide some energies in the certified group, the group plan. I'm concerned that we tend to, in this building, do always come up with either or. And yet we have this population that the good senator raised earlier, Bates, that we started out that we were going to focus some energies and some resources there, and of course the climate change, and now we're saying, well, we're going to abandon again. And we never get to a place to where we see that something actually works. I guess my frustration is that we start out with good concepts in this building, and then we end up in saying, but you know what, we're going to shift here and only go to there. And I think the key word for me is some kind of flexibility that doesn't say that we cut off everything that we're doing at the expense of something else. And I need to put that on the record because we have a lot of small businesses and moms and pops who have employees that under 25 that need coverage, that need insurance coverage. And this was one of the vehicles to help us get there. And so I'd hate to see us abandon that as well.
Do I hear you saying that you would have some concerns if we're not very flexible in going a new direction in terms of, even though you're not able to spend all the money now, but if you were to go and maybe transfer dollars into a CHIP fund or some other fund, that you would need that money to be flexible enough so that you can have some, so that if you ratchet up, you can accommodate the numbers of people that have come on?
Madam Chair, just so you...
A way of asking you, but...
We have to meet a certain level of maintenance of effort.
Uh-huh.
And until somebody tells me otherwise, it all rests on my shoulders. Kind of gets to Senator Winter's question or comment is... If I don't do the certified plans and we have in market and has zero, there's no consequence. But if I don't market FEOP and get the enrollments under the MOE, there's dollar consequence coming in about a year and a half or 2 years. So that's why my focus on FEOP versus certified plan is simply because of the fiscal consequences of not meeting that MOE. Until I am told by CMS and then the legislature is able to make the decisions they have to make, I want to meet that MOE because I don't want to put the state into jeopardy of losing that. So I will continue to go up. The problem is I don't control when people call me and whether going down and working at Three Rivers Hospital in Grants Pass or Roseburg is successful in getting a whole bunch of people enrolled. So whether it's 500 this month or 800 this month, it's when they come in the door. And what I just want to make sure is that I will continue to try to go as fast as I can, and if I'm more successful than I think, we may have to shave some of that dollars off from a decision-making model that you want to do in terms of redistribution of the funds if we get CMS permission. I don't know if that makes sense to you. I hope that makes sense to me sometimes. It's very difficult.
We don't want to put ourselves in further jeopardy of not meeting our MOE. So I think the first piece we need to do is to continue to work to meeting our MOE. As we do that, however, it is possible to explore other options that can be in conjunction with continuing to have a FEOP group program, to look at other ways of assuring that we have options for meeting our MOE and at the same time meeting our policy objective of, I think as Senator Westland said, of using these funds in a way that will allow us to do the most good with them and cover the most people. Along those lines, we have to be very clear, and we've had some internal discussions this morning about how we can begin to frame a concept to CMS, and we can't just ask them to allow us to just use the money as we see fit. One of the issues that they will be very interested in is assuring that we use those funds and don't supplant current funds in our CHIP and Medicaid programs. And so we're going to have to lay out a very detailed plan to them to demonstrate to them that we are indeed meeting this maintenance of effort requirement. So it's going to take a clearly thought out concept to bring to them. We're very committed to doing that and to having that discussion with CMS and seeing what it is we can do. However, while we're doing that, we have to assure that, in essence, we don't dig ourselves any deeper into a fiscal hole so that a year or two from now, we're seriously at risk for a penalty.
Madam Chair,
let me just ask one question. Please, Madam Senator. As Chief Medical Officer of this state, and...
Have I been promoted or demoted? I'm not sure.
Well, I kind of thought there was somebody else.
Yeah.
Take my title for the moment.
I defer to.
He's the chief medical officer of the legislature, so don't pay that any attention.
Go ahead.
So now, and from a position from the position in which you hold as medical officer for the state, and with Rocky a part of what happens as well as DHS and the changing of the guard over there. If this committee decided that what it'd like for you to do is to seek a waiver and dollars would go to CHIP, because that's kind of what I've been hearing from people on the committee, what kind of time constraint would you feel?
We, Madam Chair, we would need to wrap this up with CMS, try and get an answer from CMS within the next 6 months, and we would do our very best to do that. Whether we would get an answer from the timetable isn't as much up to us as it is to, I can't tell you when we'll get a decision. What I can assure you is that we would work and push as hard as we could to get that decision,
right,
to meet with them, to have those discussions and not be passive and to aggressively pursue this. I think that we owe that to the individuals in the state who we'd be covering and to everybody to do our very best to get this to happen. But I can't.
See, that's what I was
concerned. I can't give you a timeline, but therefore I think it'd be very prudent to continue a strategy whereby we enrolled people in FEOP until we got a firm answer.
Yeah, but my question is, how long would it take all three of you to develop a plan for such an action to take place?
6 weeks. 6 weeks to 6 weeks we could, I think, work with a consultant And I say that needing to have the ability to go back and talk to Mr. Spate and Ms. Reed and others of us and do that.
Okay. Senator Winters?
I'll rephrase it. In dealing with CMS, so often we will run concepts by them, enough to get a feel of whether or not they would be supportive of a certain direction even before we put in the waiver request. And so my question to you is, have you had that conversation with CMS? And I can only assume that they're giving you enough of an assent that for us to begin to put some meat on the bones.
Senator Winters, what they indicated to us is that we would need to come to them with a well-developed concept. And that they would be very willing to consider it.
My other question to you, given the climate with the governors weighing in across this country on wanting to have a lot more flexibility with how they use Medicaid dollars and what have you, and there tends to be a much better reception of going along with the governors on that issue. It would seem to me that probably not only this particular request, but other requests that have to do with Medicaid waivers might be a little easier. In fact, I'm getting a sense of back in Washington that the Oregon Health Plan and what we've done here in Oregon looks pretty good to other states. Am I incorrect or am I correct?
You'd have to ask the other state.
A lot of national news when I was home recovering.
Yeah, that's right.
Certainly states are looking for increased flexibility. That's certainly something all the governors are looking for. This is a bit of a different issue because we're not looking for flexibility in our Medicaid program. What we're looking for flexibility in is around a maintenance of effort. And we need to be very clear with them about how we do that.
I do, however, think when you're talking about their dollars that sometimes they will take the supplanting issue to go beyond just one category.
That's correct. You are very correct.
Yeah.
That's great.
Madam Chair, I thought I'd be down for 10 minutes this afternoon, and obviously it's not that simple.
Yeah. we're going to come back and
I think the issue that the federal government, will CMS, will be concerned about is if we set aside this money and then take money out the back door and put it into some other program completely unrelated to anything in Medicaid, and we're not not, that's not even a consideration. It's about moving money inside the program the most effective way. My position, I think, is the same as LFO's. I think LFO had a very viable alternative for us, which was to set aside the money in an appropriation that the emergency board can act on. If they get a denial, they can put it right back into FEOP. They can do it in before 6 months if they get an immediate denial. But at the end, when that clock ticks down to 6 months, the money has to be released back to FEOP because they have to have time to do their maintenance of effort. And that's something I think is very reasonable. I would also ask that while we might want to put in the FCHIP program, we might not want to also, because I don't want to be in a situation in November looking at the e-board and they're saying, well, this is tied up for FCHIP only. You can't sign up people up fast enough. And we're right back to where we can't really do our maintenance of effort in FCHIP either. And we're going to have trouble with the federals in that point of view. So I'd want that to be a little wider than that and a well-thought-out plan that we can standard be included, FCHIP included, and FEOP included. You might split it three different ways in order to get the best effect for your money. I think we have to keep it very, very flexible if we do this account and allow the agency to come back to us in November or sooner and say, we need the money to go here and here and here, and then e-board to act on. That would be my recommendation if I could be that bold. And that any change in statutory law would be dependent upon a CMS waiver being changed, not that we would do one or the other.
Comments? I'm sorry, John.
No. I think flexibility is important. That flexibility also needs to be weighed against what will have the best chance of success, and part of the issue that CMS will be looking at is how we account for all of these funds. So we have to balance out. I think you're absolutely right. One issue is assuring we'll meet our MOE, allowing ourselves the flexibility to do that, but by the same token, I think we want to craft something that has some chance of success that meets the requirements that CMS will be looking for. So there are going to be some constraints around what we can do, what CMS will let us do, and I think working within those parameters, we can look to seek something from them. But they're going to be asking for us to detail some things as well. They're going to be asking for some things back, and part of this will be a negotiation as well. And I think so long as there's an understanding that there needs to be the ability to weigh all the factors, I think we can move forward.
Question, Madam Chair. Are we using the same consultant that assisted us the last time?
Senator Winters, we have.
Mr. Britton?
Just one remark, Madam Chair, and that is that a special purpose appropriation could be staged. That is, the larger the amount for the special purpose appropriation, the shorter the time period. What I mean by the shorter the time period that we have to get our ducks lined up. If you're talking about $1 million SPA, that could wait a longer time. By the same token, if you're talking about a $15 million special purpose appropriation, we got to know that like
next
today.
Month.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's ability to work here in terms of the dollar amount and so on. So,
Doctor, I want to put this on both you and Rocky. You know, reshoot has everything to do with both the departments. Under overestimation, feds over underestimation, but the legislature. And then the legislature always get angry with the Department of Human Services, basically saying you have not done your jobs because we should be able to better estimate, you know, cost and we end up every year having to use, loan them or give them dollars from, general fund because of these kinds of miscalculations over or under. So my advice would be for you guys to really think about this before you, before we make any kind of move, and for you to further advise me in terms of some of your thoughts, because I worry every time I hear the word reshoot. We don't even know what a ballpark figure is for that at this particular point. That bothers me greatly. So
Senator, we will do things in a thoughtful and a well-reasoned and informed manner.
Question, Madam Chair. Thank you. I need clarification regarding OHP standards. And is it possible to open up OHP standard to children that takes into account what we're doing here, or do those who are, would be eligible for OHP standard be those that would be eligible for FCHIP?
Chair Carter and Senator Mona Sanderson, OHP standard is solely for adults, and it's a program that only is for adults under 100% of poverty. Children are covered in our Medicaid and CHIP program up to 185% of poverty.
Thank you. So we're talking about basically the same kids but in different categories.
It's different levels of match in our Medicaid and in our CHIP program. CHIP are for older kids, and CHIP is for kids who, CHIP is for kids who are at a higher level, a higher income level, and they have a higher match rate.
No, Madam Chair.
No other questions for the good of the order, colleagues?
No.
Okay, if not.
It's poverty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a wonderful discussion. I mean, it was a good discussion.
It really was.
Good
policy. Thank you.
Thanks
for
having a good policy discussion.
Bruce? What was that last part?
Oh.